I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Emily Mills. Emily's the founder of Jesus Said Love, a Christian nonprofit ministering to people involved in the commercial sex industry. She began this trajectory toward restorative justice as a Baylor student, and has expanded Jesus Said Love into now offering job training, counseling, and even a cool retail space on Columbus Avenue. But today is a super special episode because we have both of our real estate experts on board. So before we jump into my conversation with Emily, let's touch base with Greg Gleim and figure out what's happening in downtown real estate. I'm now joined in studio by the commercial real estate expert of Waco Business News, Greg Gleim. Greg is here for his monthly installment, What's Happening Here, where he answers your questions about what's going on in downtown. Greg, welcome to the show.
It's good to be back.
All right, Greg, I heard from Cynthia in Waco, and she said, I was driving downtown by 4th Street, and I saw a little bit of action at the Containery. I'd heard about it a while ago and went radio silent. So fill us in. What's going on at the Containery right now?
Radio silence, a good way to put it, because that's kind of, if there's a marketing strategy, it's radio silence is what I've tried to do lately. We were supposed to have that project delivered in October of 2017. Obviously, now we're looking at September, October of 2018. Construction has kicked off. We're waiting to get a good final timeline, but it's looking like February or March of 19 delivery. That type of construction was new to the city. It's really new to the country in the sense that they're bringing in shipping containers and making 30, 40,000 foot of leasable commercial space out of them. So just that aspect of it was new to the city, permitting, energy codes. On top of that, you throw in TIF improvements, the sidewalks, the streets, an alleyway that's halfway abandoned. Where are you going to put trash for 30,000? It's a whole complex hurdles to jump through in many different facets of the development. So that's what caused the delay. The good news is it's been permitted. Containers are on their way. They're 3 months out, and I think we should start seeing it go up. I think they're pouring the concrete today.
Wow.
And we should start seeing containers go up here pretty quick.
So what's the thought process behind using containers rather than more traditional means?
You know, I think there's a number. Cost efficiency is one, though over the last year and a half, as long as the developer's been working on this, we've seen the cost increase.
All your construction costs are rising?
Yeah, similar to other traditional type construction. I think it's a unique look. It's more of an industrial feel, which is a trend, not just in Waco right now, but across the country. They're very energy efficient. They give you the ability to shrink down. This project really concentrates floor space for these retailers. They can lease a container for $1,200, $1,300 a month. They can dedicate all the floor space in that container to the retail sales. And then you can walk out and have common area bathrooms. We have storage areas down in the basement to where you're not paying $30 a square foot in rental rates like these other retailers are in Waco. You can go down the basement and have your little locker with storage area for extra inventory and save the high-value real estate for up in those containers. So it brings a lot of density into one little city block right next to Dr. Pepper Museum. You've got the Barron's Lofts in between the Silo District and River Square. So we're cramming 30,000 foot of retail and restaurant space in on that block, which will be a really – in a unique type construction. I think it's going to be an exciting development.
Yeah, it's interesting not just because of the new materials that are being used, but because this is also an adaptive reuse. You guys are working on a building that's been there for a long time.
It has, yeah. The original developer of the Barron's Lofts actually had this track left over from that project, and nothing's been done with it. I think it used to service city buses, the little warehouse building there. So the front of that building will turn in to your typical storefront retail space that you see across downtown, with the backside of it being a common eatery area. There will be different vendors serving pizza, hamburgers. We're still looking to fill that up. And so if you can help get the word out, that'd be great. But we kind of envision 5 or 6 food retailers in the backside of that. And then the rest of it be more of your clothers. We've got coffee, tea, boutiques, hair salon type of deal filling up the rest of it. So it's just it's a unique concept, and it's one that filled up really quick. I think the reason why it went radio silent is because we started hitting these delays. I've taken all marketing off because we were 70% occupied in the first 60 days of releasing it in March of 17. And, you know, you get real tired, disappointed in telling people, hey, hold on, we hit another hurdle, let's wait. So we've tried to not market the property until we actually start seeing containers go up. And we've already got a pretty good waiting list as far as when those containers go up is going to trigger me reaching back out and start signing letter of intents and LOI or and leases on the development.
Well, Cynthia, if you are looking for a way to get in there at the Containery, Greg's your man. So thank you so much for submitting your question. And commercial real estate expert Greg Gleim, thanks again for coming on Downtown Depot.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I'm now joined in studio by the Waco Business News residential real estate expert, Austin Hooper. He's here for his monthly segment called the Residential Recap Hoop. Tell me what's going on in the Waco housing market right now.
Meek, good to see you, man. We are, so what is this, September, mid-September, right? School has started recently. More or less, the real estate calendar does tend to reflect a school calendar. In the past, you would kind of see these big peaks and valleys where the market is peaking, you know, between, let's say, March and July. And then from August through the end of the year, getting into the holidays, things are a little sleepier.
And is that because families want to get out of this school district, go to that school district, and that happens in the summer typically?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, some people will point to the weather sometimes. It's just nice to be out in the spring, in the summer, out and about looking at houses. I think there's something there.
Get a little spring fever.
That's right, yeah. And then the school calendar, you know, folks, if they had a choice, they would wait until the summer to move so that they aren't having to take their kids out of school in the middle of the school year, that sort of thing. Not that everyone out there buying a house has kids and cares about the school calendar, but just if we're looking at trends, that's what has traditionally gone on. So all that to say, I think the market in general, we don't really have the slow times like we used to, but right around school starting, and this has happened every year since I've been in real estate, you know, for those 3 or 4 weeks, you know, towards the end of August, beginning of September, the market does kind of take a breath. And so, you know, just as people are coming back from vacation, getting kids into school, it takes a few weeks to kind of get back into that normal life rhythm and people start to get back out and look at houses again.
So while we're in that process of the market taking a breath, this might be a great time for somebody to jump on a house because there wouldn't be as much competition from other people. How would someone who is a first-time homeowner go through that process? Like, kind of walk us through the steps.
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, you bring up a great point. It's been so crazy with so many people moving to Waco that it can be sort of an intimidating process for home buyers. I know I've had my fair share of multiple offer situations. You have to go see a house the day or the weekend that it hits the market. So it's pretty stressful. So right now, as you know, really I feel like the market's taking a little bit of a deeper breath this year than in previous years. It's a great time to get out there. Things aren't moving at quite a frantic pace. So yeah, if for the first time home buyers out there that may be wondering, you know, what's my first step? To me, it's sort of a 1A and 1B. It doesn't really matter what order, in my opinion, you do this in, is to find a lender and find a realtor. A lot of times, the first place people go is the internet. They've got their phones out and they're perusing houses, and they may not really know what their price range is. And so they're looking at all these, you know, $400,000 houses that look awesome, and then you know, maybe they meet with a lender and they get pre-approved for a $600,000 house. For a first-time home buyer, that's not typically the case. But
I mean, that's what happened to Julia and me. We spent a ton of time on Trulia looking at houses. We actually put a house under contract because I thought, hey, I can read contracts. I can do it. Got cold feet, pulled out. And then, of course, I found you and you helped us find our beautiful home. So yeah, you can think that this realtor, he's just reading paperwork, but you guys are keeping the whole process together, and it's really important to have someone that you trust.
Sure. Well, thank you for saying that. I agree. I, I love what I do, and I think we provide a valuable service. Finding a lender that you trust and or an agent, and again, those can go in either order, and a lender can help you find a great agent, and an agent can help you find a great lender. Of course, talk with your friends that have purchased homes recently. Did they enjoy their experience with their realtor? Would they recommend, you know, their lender? That's much better than driving by a house and you see someone's face on a sign and you call that phone number. Not the best way to go about it. Get yourself a buyer's agent that will represent you, not just the seller. They can show you all the houses that are available in Waco, not just, you know, the sign that they have there, or the house that they have their sign in the yard. So anyway.
Well, and if you are on the path to home ownership, I encourage you, put this down on your calendar, Tuesday, October 2nd from 12 to 1 p.m. So you can find this event on Facebook. It's called Path to Home Ownership. That the folks over at the Syntex Hispanic Chamber are going to be doing that on October 2nd from 12 to 1 p.m. Our residential real estate expert, Austin Hooper, thanks for bringing the heat, man.
Thank you, sir. It was fun.
If you saw me last month on KWTX, you heard me tell morning anchor Taina Maya about a program called Leadership Waco. This is a year-long training course put on by the Greater Waco Chamber of Commerce with the intent of grooming a new crop of civic leaders. Each month has a different focus, and September's meeting highlighted Waco's history. History Day started at the McCullough House, one of the four homes preserved and presented by the Historic Waco Foundation. Dr. Stephen Sloan, a Baylor professor, walked us through his app called Waco History, which you can download for free in the App Store. It's super cool. It shows a map of the city with virtual historic markers that you can click on to access stories, photos, and audio, much of it compiled by the Texas Collection on Baylor campus. We then teamed up with Ashley Thornton, who you get to hear every week on KWBU, to visit the Alico Building, Suspension Bridge, and the Vietnam Memorial. One of my classmates, Paige Corley, works for the Providence Foundation.
I really liked what Dr. Stephen Sloan said when he said that history has multiple different perspectives. I thought that was really good. And I think it led really well into one of Ashley's statements when she said that some changes that were made are not always good for everybody. And so I think that that's one thing that's really important as future leaders, that we have to think about the changes that are being implemented and how that's going to affect everybody.
While touring St. Francis on the Brazos, a stunningly beautiful Catholic church at 3rd and Jefferson, we learned that the area known as Calle Dos was once the heart of Hispanic culture in Waco. But government programs like urban renewal bulldozed the area in the name of progress, displacing many Latino citizens and losing parts of their history forever. Nicole Herring, director of clinic operations at Providence Health Alliance, was pensive while touring the homes of the early pioneers who put Waco on the map.
You know, everywhere we went, it was like, oh, the Mann family or this family. And so it really made me think about, obviously, what my family's impact may be on Waco. And as I kind of, as part of going through this process, was trying to find some places that I really want to plug into Waco and to put my energy into. And so today, for me, was a really good way to kind of that reminder of, this is why you're here.
The day's experience reminded me of a quote by Martin Luther King Jr. We are not makers of history. We are made by history. I'll keep you updated on the happenings of this Leadership Waco cohort on social media. So follow Waco Business News on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. I'm now joined in studio by Emily Mills. Emily is the founder and chief ideation officer of Jesus Said Love. Welcome to the program.
That's right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Give us your Waco history, Emily. How'd you end up here?
So I ended up here as a student at Baylor University. I came in 1996 and was a communications major and a ministry guidance student. I was part of the ministry guidance program. Once I figured out I probably didn't want to do broadcast journalism or be a reporter, maybe I had some sort of something to do in ministry. So I went to the Department of Religion. I learned about the ministry guidance program, which meant I didn't lose all my course credit for being a communication major. I could just kind of fold into this ministry understanding and calling. So it was really a formative kind of process to figure out who you were going to be in the world.
So was there a moment when you realized I want to be in the ministry, or I definitely don't want to be a broadcast journalist?
Yes. So When I was a sophomore at Baylor, I attended a large group weekly Bible study there. So it was kind of the first time that I had been in an environment where it was like relevant music. It was kind of in the 90s, you know, late 90s. It was kind of this move of kind of this passion movement. Louis Giglio started a ministry here at Baylor. My now husband, who wasn't at the time, was leading worship with that ministry. And so I would go to these Bible studies and I would just hear really incredible worship. And that's how I met Brett. That's how I met my future husband. Really didn't see myself being a part of church culture in that, in leadership.
And why was that?
I think I had a lot of insecurities just regarding my past, and I hadn't fully reconciled how my story could be used in kind of the kingdom of God type work. I am a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, and that brought on a lot of shame and a lot of ways that I probably acted out because of it. And or maybe not because of it, but just it was just how I responded to my own trauma.
It shatters your self-worth and what
totally.
You think you can do.
Yeah, and just your confidence in your own body and in your own skin. So you're kind of vacillating, especially as a woman, you know, like your identity and feeling like you're just here for the pleasure of men, or you're just, this is what you are. I struggle with an eating disorder. I just thought there's no way, like in my shape, that, you know, I would fit in this line of ministry. That just wasn't who I was. I hung out with partiers. I was a sorority girl. I would say I was kind of, quote, a good girl, but I just had a very diverse group of friends. And I I didn't want that to change. I actually was like, if I am on stage, like singing Jesus songs, like, can I still have these friends that I have and
right.
these people that I love so much who, you know, are smoking pot on front porches and, you know, like listening to Grateful Dead, or like, can I still be that? And so, of course, as I believe, like, that's exactly part of why God called me into this line of work. And I just got to see through my journey that God wasn't asking for perfection. He was asking for availability. And so if I could just surrender that yes, then God would take whatever I could give him and just use that in a very comfortable, human, beautiful kind of way. And so that was kind of my sophomore year. I had a moment for sure during one of these worship nights where I had been singing with the worship team, and then it hit me that I really didn't want to do anything else with my life but sing or create or make space for God and for people. Like, that's what I wanted my life to be about, was making space, creating spaces for God and people. And so here we are.
You made yourself available to people working in the sex industry.
In 2003, I became pregnant with my first daughter, Hattie. And then in 2004, we ended up, and we were still traveling, still writing music, creating albums. Then in 2004, we ended up in Austin. We were singing for a women's event. And it was at that event that I heard of women who had been impacted by the commercial sex industry. And I just knew, it was very, very crystal clear that I was supposed to be a part of this line of work, that I was a part, these were my people. And I think that along the way, through my time at Baylor, volunteering with Mission Waco, getting really like deeply ingrained in some of the poverty-related issues in Waco as a Baylor student, really informed my Christian worldview lens. And then by the time it came full circle to 2004, I was really ready to surrender kind of that next yes, which is I will be available to go and learn and be among women in strip clubs. The women who were sharing at that event were just telling their stories. I mean, they really weren't trying to gain anything, any any recognition or there was no opportunity for me right then to like give money toward this huge cause. It was literally like, here's our story. Here's what's impacted our lives. Here's what we believe, you know, as women, even in the commercial sex industry, that we're capable of. And we need the church, and we need to not be judged so harshly. And we need for people, we need to have a voice in our communities. And so I wanted to go and learn, and I wanted to bring the love of God into the strip clubs. And so in 2004, that's when we started strip club outreaches. And then 2007 is when we named it Jesus Said Love. And then that's when Brett came on board, because Brett was still just doing full-time worship. And so in 2007, he said, hey, I think this thing actually needs a little more structure. Like, I want to be a part of it. I want to help you build this. And so And so that's when we began to develop more programs and not just our outreaches, but we expanded across Texas and really put a lot more structure to it.
I'm so excited to have you on the show, Emily, because this is my first time having both a husband and a wife on as a featured guest. So Brett joined me on the show back in May 2017, but I wanted to have you on because Jesus Said Love has taken many iterations since then.
Yeah.
Since that point, you guys have now fully established yourself there at Columbus Avenue and 15th, and you've opened up a couple of different avenues to get the message out to people, where now you aren't only ministering to mostly women in the commercial sex industry, but families who have been influenced by it, or what you're doing with the Stop Demand School, you know, people who have been caught in the industry and they're seeking reconciliation.
Right.
Tell us a little bit about how JSL has grown and what Lovely Access and Stop Demand really are doing.
Yeah. So it really is just an incredible thing to be a part of. It is such an amazing like job. I can't believe we get the opportunity to literally see so much transformation. It's like we're constantly just taking in transformative work. And 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, actually, we were given a building on 15th in Columbus. We had a donor step forward and say, I want to buy this building outright for you guys. It was a $200,000 purchase, and he purchased it outright for us and said, you guys come up with a renovation budget. That took us another year. And so then in 2016, we opened the doors to Jesus Said Love and Lovely Enterprises. So the building is this mid-century mod building. It's really just a bright spot in Uptown. It's just a cool space. A little history. It was built right after the 1953 tornado. So the guy who built it, it's concrete from top to bottom. It is able to withstand an F5.
Wow.
And so it's so really kind of prophetic in some ways for the many storms that are being sheltered within those walls now, because what was once meant as like a physical shelter is now providing so much emotional and spiritual shelter for women and guys too. So when we opened the doors to Jesus Said Love, one side of the building is the Jesus Said Love headquarters, which houses a counselor from the Advocacy Center for our women. It houses our Access program, which is an 8-week holistic a transitional program for women leaving the sex industry. The reason this is so transformative is because they're actually paid to be a part of this 8-week program. So they're scholarshiped students who come through Access. And we office out of there. On the other side of the building is our Lovely Enterprises, which is our social enterprise. This is where we sell ethically and socially responsible goods. We train women in job skills, and we create earrings for Magnolia Market. We wholesale bath and body products. We have awareness apparel and t-shirts that people can buy. And it's just really, it's like the bright spot. We do pop-up shows all over Texas. So everything we make there directly goes into Jesus Said Love and helps the women. We also launch micro businesses. And so the very first business we were able to be a part of is Luna Juice Bar. So we were able to do a micro loan to her in the form of a $10,000 grant, where she ended up opening on Austin Avenue, like really taking her business to the next level. So that was incredible. And she's now training more women. I mean, Summer's just, you've had her, she's
She's incredible. And you guys are buddies there in Uptown, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're buds. And we're actually neighbors now. We can't get away from each other. So we live really close.
So she's over on Austin. You guys are on Columbus.
Yes. And then personally, we live right next to each other, too. And so then with Stop Demand School, so what we realized about the sex industry is that we could be working on the supply side all day long till the cows come home. But unless we tackled the demand, what's driving the demand for sex? Like, what is behind kind of the mind and the desire to buy and purchase women? And because it is largely women. It's largely white educated males who are purchasing women. Mm-hmm. The average age of entry into the industry in the U.S. is 13 years old for a girl, 9 years old for a boy. And so we clearly have an issue in this country with exploiting people. And I think that if you're only working on one side of the issue, you're really short-circuiting your ability to create impact and change. So Stop Demand School was created out of the Heart of Texas Human Trafficking Coalition. The idea came up to kind of reinstitute this, quote, John School. And they said, we need like a nonprofit to take this on. This is too big. And so I said, you know, this would really work in what we do. We would be willing to really talk about what this looks like. And so it took us 2 years to create buy-in with the DA and probation and judges. And so now Stop Demand School is running every month. We have offenders who buy or try to purchase sex in McLennan County and now Bell County, and they take a class in an undisclosed location. They pay $500 for Stop Demand School. That money goes straight into Access Program and helping women with their needs who've been harmed and who've been exploited through the sex industry. And we use restorative justice principles. Brett, my husband, leads that program. It's a very restorative program. We have the McLennan County Health Department. We have sex addiction therapists come in, Don Arterburn, and teach. We have survivors. We have women who've been through our Access Program who want to share their stories with offenders and offer them a chance for change. And that's where I'm like, this work is so crazy good. Because if you have a victim who is willing to look in the eye of an offender and say, if I can change, you can change too. Like, let's change together. I mean, that's just a win all the way around. Wow.
That is so powerful.
Yeah.
And the work you're doing is powerful, especially in conjunction with other people who are pulling the same way.
Right.
You know, you have you guys, the Trafficking Coalition, like you mentioned, Unbound.
Unbound, right. Mm-hmm.
It seems like McLennan County in particular has made a commitment that we are going to fight this. This is not going to happen
here. Right. And I think really when you peel back the layers, I think for me, the reason this is so important is because if we want Waco to be a city where it's flourishing, we've got not just economic prosperity, but we're talking about social prosperity, like a community who is unified, who loves each other, who's willing to do reconciling work together on hard issues. If you're going to have that kind of community, then you have to look at the populations who've been marginalized and bring their voices to center. So that's going to be women. You know, what kind of job opportunities are available? Because 89% of women in the sex industry say they want out but don't have a means of survival. That's not a morality problem. That's an economic problem, right? I mean, that's not, you know, Susie's not here choosing to sell her body because she's just wanted to do this since she was five. She's doing this because men are still paying. And that's easier for her to do than to go get a livable wage job. So we're looking at, yeah, what's a livable wage for women, a single mom with four kids? I mean, are entrepreneurs in our city just going to be men who have a lot of resources? Or are we going to help, you know, not just even women, but let's talk about African-American women. You know, let's talk about Hispanic women. What kind of support are we giving to those communities to help them come to center of this issue? And so it is about everyone flourishing. So in a place where everyone can flourish, then you've got a better community all the way around.
That's inspiring stuff. Emily Mills is the CIO, Chief Ideation Officer, and founder of Jesus Said Love. Find them online. Find how you can get involved. JesusSaidLove.com. Emily, thank you so much for sharing a little bit of your story.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Thanks again to Emily Mills, Greg Gleim, Austin Hooper, and all the folks involved in that Waco History Day. It really was so moving and informative. Find me online at Waco Business News for updates on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter between shows. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.